Good morning, and welcome to A Chat in the Garden with Monique A.J. Smith, where significance blooms in athletics and sports business here in the garden. I'm excited to share with you our messages for today and our guests for today. Bringing information to you that is needed in a time such as this is a great resource. Introducing our new media partner, Dr. Shanice Nelson, who just took a position at Southern University, so I'm really excited about that. But more excited about her company, Dr. Janae Executes. And one of her concentrations that I know is really needed right now is knocking out biases, which is her signature workshop that she has with she has a deep expertise in leadership, management, and policy issues. She helps organization leaders identify and change underlying causes of racial tension and biases within their organization by providing a safe and structured environment for individuals and teams to have tough conversations about diversity, inclusion, and equity with the goal of greater understanding and overall organization improvement. Contact her to assist your team in knocking out biases at knockoutbiases.com. I'm thrilled for what is going to occur this week with Dr. Chico Carwell. This is going to be quite exciting. Last week we talked about the black male student athlete, and it came from the book Race, Sports, and Education from Dr. John Singer. And he is going to join us this Thursday to continue the conversation and to give us the best practices that came out of his research. And what he did, he interviewed, I think it was 13 male student athletes in one life skills program. And I heard him on a different podcast, and it drew me to share with you as a resource, because honestly, in this emotional time of social unrest, we are going to have to discipline ourselves to use data-driven decisions to get the influencers and the decision-makers to fund some of the things that we want to have done. You know, some of them will be able to get on board based on, just be honest, the customer relationships of students and the influx of students coming to HBCUs, which I love because I work at HBCU, and HBCU graduate. But if you happen to work at a non-HBCU and you know that you may not be doing all you can do based on your background and knowing what needs to be done, but you don't feel like you have any power or influence, and now is the time. And so if you need to have some resources to help you with that, surely Dr. Shanice Nelson can help you. Again, go to knockoutbiases.com. But if you are in a position to create programming, but you need some extra dollars, it never fails when you are working in higher ed and you say, research says. So I really invite you to join me tomorrow at 11 o'clock with Dr. Chico Carwell when we continue the conversation. And this week is called Education Matters, Then and Now, Race, Sports, and Education. And to register, visit successcultureconsultantcoach.com. Successcultureconsultantcoach. And that is also a free webinar. I look forward to seeing you there. And as always, I love providing resources, and one of the resources that I believe is a great eye-opener For us as advisors for young people who have a desire to take their talent on a professional level. And honestly, I've also recommended this book to young people who wish to be sports agents, because you really need to understand the life of who you're trying to assist. And let's just be honest, some of our textbooks and whatnot are just not going to tell you what is expected on the other side. And I learned a great deal by reading this book, and it's called Surviving the Lights, A Professional Athlete's Playbook to Avoiding the Curse by Tawana Smith. And she is very research-oriented as well. So excited about her pursuing her PhD, because I really believe that she is going really going to assist the Academy of providing the student-athletes a holistic view. Because, honestly, I was one of those people who did not believe of a student leaving early to go professional. I can't help it. Both my parents were school teachers, and I really love education. But, you know, the thing is, if you were there to educate and to grow people, you got to meet them where they are. And if their whole desire is to go professional, why not give them the information they need to be successful after which? Because let's be honest, after you provide them what they need and you were there and you listened to them, when they are ready to come back and get education after pursuing their professional sports life, they'll come back. They will come back and they will remember. And those who were in academic advising and life skills, I just know Shaq always gives back to his academic advisors department because they were there for him. And I just know many of people giving information like that. So, you know, why not provide them another resource for them to understand what they're about to embark on, which is the advisement of their next is not just the person who negotiates the contract. It is knowing what type of lodging, home that you should be pursuing. Should it be an apartment? Should it be a house? You know, and this was enlightening to me, you know, why people want to give people cars and houses, but it may not be in the player's name, or it may be just given to them without applying for credit. So when the days of playing it over, they have no credit. They have no credit score because nothing has been in their name. I mean, there's just things like that you just never would have thought of, and you know they're not thinking about it because they're thinking about what they run in the 40 and how and who's going to be looking at them at this game and that game, and we understand that, but you need to have people around you who do understand that. And it may not be your uncle who has been selling insurance for years and he's good with accounting. He just won't know all of these things. So it's in a book, y'all. It's in a book, and it's in three different formats. It's in paperback, it is in audio, and it's in ebook. So just go to Amazon and type in Surviving the Lights, A Professional Athlete's Playbook to Avoiding the Curse. And this would be a great gift to them if they're about to sign on that dotted line and you are thought to be an advisor of them. I have another great resource that I'm excited to be able to share, and an announcement. If you're a member of the Chat in the Garden group and you try to click on any of the replays before July 2020 will not work. We have transformed to another format, and all of that, the previous format, they have closed down. So that was on the Survivor Radio Network, and they no longer are in business. And so I was able to download all of the previous podcasts from season 1 to season 6. And so we still have the property. It's just that the links that you have will not work. And so we have put them all in a vault. So if you want those people like to binge on Netflix or listen to podcasts while you do whatever it is, walking, talking, cleaning, sleeping, whatever, here's the place to go. Go to 200plus.expert, 200plus.expert, to get 200-plus interviews with black women in athletic administration and sports business, so that you can gain all the knowledge about the different pathways to these careers, their advice for others, and their current initiatives. This is a labor of love, because I didn't want us to lose that. And let's be honest, almost every young person who meets me, who are in grad school or about to enter grad school or just got their master's or just got their undergrad in this area, they say, what is your advice? And I always say, just listen to the replay. Just listen to the replays. And then the most important thing I want you to realize is the podcast is a bridge for you to network, because you can listen to the podcast and say, hello, my name is blank, and I have listened to your podcast on the Chatham Garden, and I have a follow-up question. That is my gift to you to help you get to where you want to be. It becomes the bridge. You really, the going up to person and says, can you be my mentor, does not work. It really does need to be organic. Or a playing situation, because many of the people are already, like, busy, busy, busy. And so if you have a direct question, a planned question, and that you did your research, you'll be better served to get the answer that you want and develop a organic mentor. So make sure that you go ahead and enroll in 200plus.expert. And listen at your own leisure, and it's 200-plus, 6 seasons. And you know how many weeks in a year. All right, we got a couple of replays within there for holidays and whatnot. But you can grow. Thus is the reason why this is called The Garden. Thus is why my company is called Season of Empowerment, because my whole point is to help you grow and help you to advance. And I had a great beginning of the week. I've had 2 virtual book signings and discussions. It's been great. I mean, absolutely great. And we're having another one this Friday. And so the reason why I created that is because in the chapter in the book called Removing the Face, my chapter is called Public Figure Mask, Exit Stage Left. And many people would be, people would celebrate you continuously, like we do here in the garden. And I have learned over the 30 years being in this business, actually, this week definitely marks 30 years of me embarking upon my first full-time job in athletic administration at St. Paul's College as Sports Information Director. And what I've learned is, and not just in athletics, in any type of leadership role, when you become the first, you get all the praises. And then when people praise you, you have a sense of people will put the, when you are first, there's some demands on you. There's some pressures. And you may not be aware that you're allowing those pressures to guide you in directions that there may not be a place you want to go. And so by being, again, I graduated college in 22, and being the first female full-time SID for the CIAA, within the CIAA, not the CIAA office yet. My journey does take me there. But And I listened to a podcast this week about women, black women journalists. And I tell you, it's disheartening. I mean, again, if I just said I started out 30 years, it was hard, y'all. It was hard, but I was so engrossed in what I was doing because I knew I could promote anything. And I was looking forward to promoting the athletic department at St. Paul's College. But, you know, there's some barriers there, and it can develop a chip on your shoulder, or it can help. It would develop a sense of imposter syndrome. Again, all these things are growth mindset versus fixed mindset. And I share within our virtual discussion, I go more in depth into my career and the things that I learned. And the reason why I wrote the chapter was to assist you how to navigate that with a more of awareness. And I say that you are driving your ship, lead your ship, manually and not auto. And usually auto, it means that external stimulus is just guiding you, meaning I owe so many people, I'm standing on so many shoulders, people are praising me, they're all happy for me, they're pulling for me, and I can't let them down. And there's some truth to that, but that can't be 100% of your fuel to move your ship. So I've been blessed to be able to share my experiences in a more in-depth way. So if you would like to join the discussion, please visit Monique A.J. Smith S. ZoomRoom.com. We have two more dates on the docket, this Friday and then one at the end of the month. And I probably will find some other individuals. If you're listening and you have already purchased the book, we can revenue share and you can host a virtual book signing. So if you really enjoyed the book and you got something out of it, and you want to share with some other individuals, not necessarily people in athletic administration, just women in leadership in general, please contact me, and I'd be really glad to do that. So each individual gets a book and an e-workbook that helps them, guide them in some of the ways of not to hit the wall, literally and figuratively, like I did. And I think that's all of my announcements for this morning. Every time I do that, I just feel like I'm in church doing the announcements. And so I am really delighted to bring our guest for today on. This is an individual that I had a chance to meet almost a year ago. I went to my very first NAS conference, and I'll just be very honest with you. I have really enjoyed learning the academia part of sports management. I came into this business as an athletic administrator, and I'm a lifelong learner, so it has been very enlightening for me to meet other individuals that look like me, who actually, it affirms me, because even though I was athletic administrator, I never embraced we got to win. I mean, like, I always thought about the individual winning, using this opportunity to grow themselves and be ready for the world. Now, I was just an SID. I was a person telling the story, the human interest stories of our student athletes, and telling the story of the game to hopefully get them honors, All-American or All-Conference, making sure the human interest stories were in their hometown papers, things such as that. Before we had social media, and our SID people have a lot of things to do. But for me, it was doing what I'm doing now, celebrating the student-athlete holistically, because it wasn't just what they were doing on the playing fields. It was what they were doing academically. And because it was a very small school, they knew I cared about them more than what they were doing for us when they put on their uniform. And I told people, even in my class, and they don't even know what I'm talking about, my love of this happened very early on by watching the TV show White Shadow. And I did not watch the show because of the basketball. I actually began to watch the show because my cousin was one of the stars of the show. And so I started watching it. But then the storyline is how we use basketball and the social interaction of the players and the coach. And I was like, wow, you know, and I love the storyline. And something seeps into you and you don't even know. But guess what, y'all? There are people who study and research this. And I was like, I found my tribe. And because it still goes together for me about telling the story of what our people are all holistically. So I just had the opportunity to have lunch. And I tell you, I think our lunch lasted like to evening because I was there the whole time. And I just can't wait for you all to meet Dr. Christine Gibson. Welcome to the garden, Christine. Did you hear your cheers?
Hi. Thank you for having me.
You're so very welcome. Did you hear your cheers?
I did.
I know you're going to knock out the park for us today because I think we sat there for lunch for like 4 hours. That's why I feel, because I never moved. I was eating lunch with you, and we stayed there so long that I ended up sitting there and meeting somebody else for dinner.
I think that's how it worked. We were just in the same room, and we both needed someone to go to lunch with, and we just started talking, and we decided to continue our conversation after one of our sessions.
Wonderful, wonderful. And I appreciate you just joining us here, and I know you're going to bring in some great insight. But before we begin with questions, you know, just share with our audience your journey from college to now.
Right. So my journey is not straightforward. I think when we all go to college, we have our plans. I think I had my plan of having a career, being married, having kids. I could tell you what age everything was going to happen. And then you went to college and some things changed. And for me, soccer has been like a thread through my life. Sports has been a thread through my life,
mm-hmm.
Where sport has allowed me to – I majored in sport in undergrad and grad school and did my PhD. I played soccer in undergrad. I coached at Georgia State as my graduate assistantship position, and I played overseas while I did my PhD. And it was just something that I woke up to every day and enjoyed talking about. So started with soccer, but it was always just different sports. So sport has been my academic career, or that's been what's leading me within my academics or whatnot. But I did my master's at Georgia State, and I was working under Dr. Brenda Pitts, who's recently retired. And we were in her office once, and I think I was just talking about doing research, and most people didn't do research at Georgia State when I was there. So we were talking about putting together a study, and then she says, hey, by the way, I'm going to Japan this summer for this Women in Sport Conference, the International Women in Sport Conference. Do you think you'd want to go? And at this time, I didn't start discussing gender issues in sport. And I really just heard, do you want to go to Japan? I was like, yeah, that'd be great. I'd love to travel. So I went with Dr. Pitts to Japan and for this Women in Sport Conference. And a few things all happened at this time. So in my grad program, we are reading a book called Networking. And so it goes back to what you were talking about with your listeners, where you tell your students to listen to some of the podcasts and go back and call someone and say, I heard this on this podcast. I have this question. So this book called Networking always talked about it is more than just or net weaving, I'm sorry. It's more than just networking. It's, you know, you have to get people to know you, and you have to, like, as you're having conversations or they're presenting, pull out a little nugget to continue the conversation so they're going to remember you.
Mm-hmm.
So as a grad student, I went to Japan. I learned more about Title IX because I had to do a presentation on Title IX, which I knew the minimum, the bare minimum we learned in class, but then I had a better understanding of it because I had to do this presentation for other young leaders. But then I also learned about gender inequalities across the world within sport, and that was a huge eye-opener at the time. And then additionally, at the time, I met Dr. Darlene Kluka, who is one of my mentors and helped me. And because of her, I did my PhD with Dr. Celia Breckenridge in England. And it all started from this question of, do I want to go to Japan? And in my head, it was to go to this women in sport conference, but that was like my eye-opener. That was my pivotal moment to say, there's gender issues in sport, and now if I reflect back on life, I can see a lot of them. I saw them in soccer when I played in college. I saw them at Georgia State. I saw, you know, the men's soccer team. They got they got more media coverage than we did. But there was a lot of equality that happened too at my. Well, I went to Methodist University where our Saturday games, they flipped times for between the men and the women. So like we all always had like a good time to play on weekends. We both always got new uniforms. So we had things like that. But then like coverage and thing. Coverage, media coverage, you could see a huge difference between that. So Japan happened. That was my that was my big aha moment, I think, in my life that opened a lot of doors. So from there, I came back. I started working with Dr. Kluka with the International Association for Girls and Women in Sport and Physical Education. I think I said that right. And that's where I learned and networked with women all over the world and trying to give opportunities for sport and physical education. I helped run a conference at Kennesaw State. I was a student at Georgia State. So at Kennesaw State, I helped Dr. Kluka run a conference. We brought women in from all over. I helped lead some meetings, so Dr. Kluka trusted me to be in a leadership role. She trusted me to, and again, I was young. I was probably 22, 23. Mm-hmm. She trusted me to help make arrangements, travel arrangements for these women coming into the United States and then run some sessions at a conference. And so that then led me, one of our big people that came over was Dr. Celia Breckenridge. And we, similar to you and I, Dr. Breckenridge and I had lunch. By the end of lunch, she said, hey, why don't you come to England and do your PhD under me? And I was like, you? Like, you're top in this world in women in sports studies, you know, and I'm still new to this. So it was really a good opportunity, and so that's what took me to England. I will tell you, my mom raised me to take opportunities, and if we could find a way to do something, then we would find the way. So it was rare that I said no to things, and so if I, this PhD, I never thought about doing a PhD. I called my mom. We talked about it quite a bit. She told me, you know, you're still young. You should, there's no reason for you not to go. You don't have any responsibilities here. You don't have any kids. You know, nothing's holding you here. Do it while you're young. So that took me to England to have the five hardest years of my life doing a PhD. But it was, it's great. I was very grateful of like learning. That's when I really learned how to do research. And that's when I really learned how to view the world through different lenses and understand the different ways of being a feminist and the different perspectives of feminism and where I fit in and my experiences fit in. So that gets me to ending college. I kind of had to get you there, Monique, first before I could say, how did I go from there to here? Because I didn't go to college thinking I was going to be a professor. I never thought I'd be a teacher. I tutored people when I was in high school, but I never thought I was patient enough to be a teacher. So my path wasn't straight. So I studied women in sport leaders for my PhD. I learned the sacrifices that women like yourself has had to make to work with sport and work in the industry. And I, like yourself, I could list a ton of people that have helped me or let me stand on their shoulders so I could get to this position I'm in today. Dr. Darlene Kluka and Dr. Brenda Pitts are two people that they made sacrifices. They took risk on me. And I ended up overseas working with women. I interviewed women. I interviewed women who got rid of sex testing in the Olympics. I interviewed women who were part of the merging the women's march with with the sport, with women in sport and carrying the torch 1 year.
Oh, okay.
So I got to interview all these, Carol Oglesby, Dr. Brenda, Barbara Drinkwater. So I got to meet all these women who were very impactful in the sport world to then be my eye-opener to just say, wow, sport isn't equal and it's not fair. Mm-hmm. And I had a lot of really good opportunities and somehow didn't recognize all the gray in sport. And we're seeing a lot of that come out, and it's always been coming out, but the last 2 years we're seeing things with U.S. gymnastics, we're seeing, athletes using their platforms, and it's being more accepted that athletes use their platforms than, the 68 Olympics and things like that. So Dr. Kluka got me my first job at Grambling State. She put my name forward for them to interview me, and I got hired at Grambling State. So when I came back to the U.S., my first place of employment was Grambling State University. I loved it there. That's where I kind of relearned the reason I want to help people. So I went to college. I wouldn't be an athletic trainer. I wanted to help people. I worked with these students at Grambling State University where they had very different life experiences from myself. And from there, I had to learn how to teach that population of students that wasn't the same as me. So mm-hmm. in your introduction, you talked about meeting people where they are, and that's mm-hmm. where I developed that value as a teacher, where I can't walk in the classroom and assume everyone has had the same background. I can't walk in the classroom and assume everyone has access to textbooks. I can't walk in the classroom and assume that people understand there are inequalities in the world. So that's where I ended up. My students, when I was there, I taught graduate students there. A lot of them were supporting their families. They had full-time jobs. They were traditional students on paper, but non-traditional students in the classroom. Mm. So I couldn't assume they could do, 20 hours of homework a week. So my classes had to be much more hands-on, had to be much more intuitive. I had to really get my students to be critical in the classroom and still give them work outside, but know that 2 or 3 hours they had with me needed to be the most valuable 2 or 3 hours that they had with me in the week. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so that's how I learned how to start meeting students where they are. And at Grambling, I really wanted to still do research, but at Grambling it was during a time of a lot of transition, so I was the grad coordinator. I was teaching some grad classes and undergrad classes. I was FAR and had a few other hats I was wearing at the time. But I just got out of my PhD program, and so I was seeing I wasn't able to do as much research as I was hoping to do. And they didn't have as much money to support our research. So although it was hard, I thought after 2.5 years, I thought it was time for me to look for another place where I could still work with students, I could still help students, but I could also do more research. Mm-hmm. And so Georgia Southern position came open. I got interviewed. When I came on my interview, it was very similar to when I was looking at undergrad universities, where I kind of like walked on campus and I met people, and like just in my heart, I felt like this was home. And so I had that exact same feeling when I was a senior in college and I walked on the Methodist University's campus. My mom will tell you, I was like, Mom, this is where I want to go. And she's like, we have five other universities. Look at Christina. And I was like, oh, but this is it. And like she'll tell you, she's like, I could have saved my money if I would have known. It was the same when I walked on Georgia Southern's campus and met the faculty. And they did kind of like a potluck luncheon where all the faculty from the department could come and I could get to meet everyone. So that was really nice. And then I came here, this is going into my sixth year, and I mostly teach social issues and sport. I'm the graduate coordinator here. I have flexibility to do research in the area that I want to. So I'm really big into functional fitness. So I run some functional fitness programs. I started off at after-school program where I offered where 80% of their membership of the program is identified as at-risk, so low-income, single-parent homes. They use governmental funding for housing and food and stuff like that, 2 years offering those kids programs. I've moved to the high school. There's a group of kids who are identified as potentially not graduating from high school. So they actually sit in a room all day. They're on their computers. They kind of do like a credit recovery type of thing. Mm-hmm. So I put on a fitness program for them in the middle of the day, 2 days a week. This was before COVID, but 2 days a week so they can get off of the computers, come down, exercise a little bit, and then go back upstairs. At our local alternative school, I found out they didn't have a PE class. So it's, you know, alternative school is like the last step for the kids before they get just put out of school altogether. So I went and ran a fitness program for them for one semester, and the productivity and success rates of the students were so good that the local school system put money into offering them real PE classes because they realized that these kids can't sit in front of computers all day long. So this has allowed me to come here and work with the community, get my students involved in learning about the local community outside of what's happening here on campus, and then my research kind of supports what I do here. Does that answer your question?
Oh, yeah, you did. And I got some more questions behind that.
Okay.
So my first question, Donna Frazier is someone that I just posted. I didn't realize that you did your PhD in England, but I was listening to different podcasts, and Donna Frazier is now, she just joined the group too, like the AD for UK, like mm-hmm. for the whole country.
Wow.
Yeah. And so listening to her talk about, I think she was an Olympian in track, and she's also a breast cancer survivor. So it was just very interesting that I have you as a guest, and I just kind of, I can't say I researched, but it's like I have a mindset that, yes, and she's also over equity in on the Committee for Equity. And so, you know, because we in the United States, we just kind of think about our inequities. But it is not just us and mm-hmm. women in sports. I mean, it's all over the inequities. So that was just interesting. So when you were learning it over in England and your research, that did give you a global feeling of it. Did it kind of give you that sense of overwhelmness? Like, okay, how are we going to fix this? This is not just in one country. How did you grasp it?
Right. So luckily my research, I was studying the International Women's Sports Organization and mm-hmm. EPSCoVay, the International Association of Physical Education and Health for Girls and Women. So luckily I was already involved with two organizations that work worldwide to try to help girls and women have access to sport, physical education, and health. So I already had a pathway of what to do. But I will tell you, Monique, what the hardest part for me was there was the research side of it, and then there was the side I was living. So the research side of it, that's like the bigger picture, like how do we do this for these different countries and try to allow girls and women to have equal and same opportunities versus now I'm playing soccer or football over there and we're the first at the university, we're the first team. So we're the top, like the varsity team is what we call it here in the United States, but we're the number one team for women. And the men's team would have, like, their number one team and then, like, four other teams under them. And the men's number one team always played on the main soccer field. They always got new uniforms and things like that. And I would talk to the girls on my team or the women on my team, and I would say, hey, like, you guys never want to play on the top pitch? And they're like, we're just lucky to be playing. We're happy to play. And I'm like, wait, what? Like, but there's stands up there. There's lights up there. Like, we should argue to play up there if the first men's team's not playing at least, because sometimes the second men's team we have to play, and we would still play in, like, this field of 20 soccer fields. So I think for me, like, I was studying it. I felt like we have more opportunities as women in the United States. So, like, as I was reflecting back to my experiences in the U.S., I'm like, well, this wouldn't even fly. Some of the things that's happening here wouldn't even fly back home. But then to even think that there's some girls and women that don't even have access to this, or when I worked with some of the African women we worked with, where we talked about girls, male coaches who would have sex with their players, and you know, just some things like there were just so many new things where I'm just like, I don't even know what to do to help at that time. So, again, luckily I was plugged in through two organizations where I learned about things and I could support other activities. So if there's a project or there's a study going on in Africa, I could support that in whatever ways that they're asking us to do. But I didn't know how to spearhead stuff on my own. But luckily I had these two organizations to work with.
So that's a lesson right there. So when there's something that's like somewhat overwhelming, that you don't know necessarily, like it seems like it's really bigger than you, join an organization and it will help you navigate that. Because I know some people become paralyzed, like it becomes like a fixed mindset. Well, it's too bigger than me, and if it hasn't changed now, but join an organization and because you get the momentum of how to correct some things. So, two more comments about before I go to break. So, at Georgia Southern, do they have a PhD program?
Not in sport management. We have a graduate program, so a master's program. It's 100% online in sport management, and it's a professional master's program. So, I would say like 60% of our students are already in the industry working somewhere, and it's not research-based. It's more of a industry-focused kind of program.
Okay, and one of my former students has just taken a GA position there, Michaela Sale. And so her last position was, I think, marketing at the MEAC. So she just put a post, I want to say this weekend, about moving there. So I'm excited about you two meeting.
Yes, I look forward to meet her. Well, we've met online through
okay,
a phone
cool.
call already, but I'll have to tell her that that now we have a mutual contact.
Oh, yes. That's what it's all about, you all. This is what the garden's all about, connecting vines and minds. So we're going to take a short break here in the Chat in the Garden with Monique A.J. Smith.
Now more than ever before, our country is having real, honest conversations about race. My passion and experience in this area is why leaders of organizations come to me when they're looking for support around the issue of diversity and inclusion. I am Dr. Sharice Janae Nelson, and I'm committed to ending racial bias, one conversation at a time. Visit me at knockoutbias.com.
This is Alva Champion Amaker of ANA Athletic Consulting and Vigilant Safety Training Center. My investment to become a member of the Advanced Academy is one of the best decisions I've made in my business and personal growth journey. Working with Monique has provided the network to connect and collaborate with some phenomenal women and leaders, exposed me to literature for growth, and opportunities to share my skill sets and knowledge. Her candid approach in the one-on-one sessions make me more accountable for taking the necessary steps toward my advanced success. Thank you, Monique, and I appreciate you.
Let's face it, the AD position is an executive position, a member of the president's administrative team, the cabinet. The department deserves the same level of leadership, knowledge, talent, experience, and professionalism as any top official on campus. Presidents are looking for AD leadership who know how to build a success culture. Recognizing this changing landscape in athletics, join me at successcultureconsultantcoach.com for info on my next course on building a success culture.
Why do colleges support student athletes pursuing every profession except professional sports? Why are they treated as just students when they're athletes, knowing that they need help surviving the lights? I'm Tawana Smith, and as a former Division I and pro athlete and now best-selling author, I've created a transition system specifically for student athletes called Surviving the Lights. For more information, visit www.survivingthelights.com to learn how we can change the game together.
Welcome, 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 welcome back. Okay, I got a couple of questions, but before I do that, I think I can already ask the one question that I was going to ask about leaving administration, because most of our guests are in athletic administration, and that's why I was like, oh, you'd be great, because you're one that began athletic administration but decided to take their talents to the classroom. And you already said it was because you wanted to do more research. And I just want to make sure that I emphasize that even though you left, your research is supporting what they do on the administrative side.
Yes, yes. And I teach that. And so it just happened. Like I said, my path wasn't straight. And it was written on a piece of paper straight before I started college, and then different opportunities came up, and so I coached soccer for probably 6 years. I was an assistant coach at Georgia State. That's how I did my GA. And if you coach, you know that 20% of your job is actually on the field and 80% is everything else, the administrative stuff. So I enjoyed that, but something about teaching people and being able to impact young minds in a different way, I personally enjoyed that more. But the research side of things I do, I'm able to get involved, like I said, in the community and things like that.
I can relate. I was asked to come back on the administrative side, I think it was last year, year before last, and I said I'll do it if I continue to teach. And at Hampton, they said that you couldn't do both. And I was like, well, I'll continue to teach. And I can definitely – my thing is always, when I look at my guiding principles, it's where I have the most influence. And so – I thought that was more important to change how the student-athletes have experienced by working with those who'd be working with them. So I can definitely relate to what you're saying. So here's a question from Dr. LaCree Carmen Johnson. She's at Purdue. She's Director of Professional Development, Associate AD. She said, you all traveled together in South Africa about a decade ago. Tell us about that experience.
Right. So I think Dr. Johnson was at, if I remember right, I think she was in school up north at that time, studying with, working under some professors who are really well known in the women's sport area. So I was my second year of my PhD, and we both went to the conference, the International Association for Physical Education and Sport for Girls and Women. We were both attending that conference, there's tons of things I can tell you about that experience. One was getting to be in South Africa. That was my first time in any of the countries in Africa, South Africa, and I spent 3 weeks there. 2 weeks to, like, kind of get to see South Africa and learn the culture, and then 1 week was the conference. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the research that was presented there was from African countries or whatnot. We got to learn more, talk more about the intersection of religion and sport and gender. We talked more about the governmental system in South Africa and with sport is a lot different from the governmental system, which is really non-existent here within sport. Mm-hmm. So I got to see how involved sport structures, how involved the government was within sport structures over in South Africa. And so the conference was really good because it was, again, whenever you go to an international conference, whatever region it's in, more of the research is going to come from that region. So it's a different type of research that you're exposed to. I got to learn about different types of programs. We would call them interventions here, but programs that are being offered in that part of the world. And then there's a group of us American women who are there bright-eyed and interested to, and what I'm grateful for is the group of women that came with Lacey and from, I think it was like the Springfield area, Massachusetts, they were all open to learning about the new culture. And so me living overseas, I was open. Like, I want to know, I want to be a sponge and absorb as much information as I can. Sometimes when people just come straight from the U.S. to another country, they're not as open, or they compare a lot to back home. But the group of women that came over, they were open to understanding the lives of girls and women in sport in that region of the world. And so that then allowed us to not only work together in this conference to see the research, but then we also met some local women from the conference who took us out, and I can't remember the name of the place we went, but it was like this restaurant we went to, not in Stellenbosch, that's where the main conference was, but we got to actually like hang out with locals. We got to go to like a local restaurant where it was like kind of community seating. They just brought food out and put it on the table, and I can remember like we just ate this like barbecue, and they eat a lot of game over there, and so it was just different types of meat, but they just had all this meat on the table, and it's not what we're used to here, but no one there that came with us, no one there kind of stuck their nose up. We were all like, we want to experience this wholeheartedly. We want to know what it's like to live here in South Africa. We want to know what it's like to hang out and get to know the locals. So it was a really good opportunity. The conference was good. We learned new research, new ways of doing research. We learned new aspects of the country. But we also had the opportunity to get involved with the local culture. And I think that's always really good when you travel.
Okay, I got one more question. Mackenzie Rector. She's a grassroots marketer for Atlanta Basketball Host Committee. And she has aspirations of going into academia after she completes her PhD at OSU. She would love to hear about any parallels between you earning your PhD and the challenge of navigating the classroom, specifically at a PWI, where most of your students might hold a different identity as your own as a black woman.
That's a great question. And again, so I went to Grambling State, and I'd never been to an HBCU. So that was an eye-opener for me.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was just a different way of
mm-hmm.
teaching, and resources were different. But my 2.5 years at Grambling State, Grambling State, it was nice to know that I didn't have to bring the conversation of race into my classroom.
Mm-hmm.
It was already there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, so if we wanted to talk about racial issues, it was already there. I didn't have to, like, tiptoe around that topic. So I left Grambling State and came to Georgia Southern, where now that comfort that I had to be able to talk about racial issues, it was no longer there. It was where I had to learn how to bring this topic up and not come across as any of the stereotypes that black women are attributed to black women, the angry black woman or, you know, or, and on my student evaluations, I have had people say that I talk about race issues too much, or I talk about
mm-hmm.
gender issues too much and things like
mm-hmm.
that. And it is what it is. I used to hate that phrase, but it is what it is. And so, I now start my, so in social issues and sport, that's my main class I teach. I now start my class off with my worldview, where
mm-hmm.
I'm a black woman, I'm a black feminist, and they're all based off of my experiences and who I am and how I walk around every day. But I also tell them, and it's actually one of my student learning outcomes, I want my students to be able to identify their worldview by the end of the semester. So if I can keep showing them, this is my worldview and this is how it came about, hopefully I can help them figure out their worldview and how they're identifying and how and why they see the world the way that they do. So I used to kind of hide from it when I first came to Georgia Southern because at Grambling it was in my face. Then I came to Georgia Southern and I tried to have these conversations, but I hid from it. And now going into this new year, you know, I am now, it's in your face. Like, here it is. I'm going to start off. So it's going to be uncomfortable. This class is uncomfortable anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But we're going to have conversations about issues that may make you feel uncomfortable. I will tell you one of the things that I try really hard to do. So if I look at the diversity of, like, my class is probably like 50% white, 40% black. We don't have many more minorities. Like, we don't have any other identities really within the classes. We're in the South. And then we probably have like 70-75% males and then 25-30% female. So there's not a lot of females in our major. I think it's consistent across the country. But I do try to present both sides of an argument, and I try to encourage my students to do the same thing. So 3 years ago, I would always do a lecture on, like, the removal of the Confederate flag at Ole Miss or something like that,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, why some people – so one part of the lecture, first we talked about symbols and how symbols have different meanings. Then we talk about, I would present, like, why people want to keep it and what some of their reasons are. And I use academic research to show, like, people say it's part of their heritage. People show that their family fought and the Confederacy and all these other things. And then I would also present the other side of it and often use research. So there's a couple studies out there that they interviewed males who got football offers, and they chose not to go there because people made comments like, you're going to be the first guy hanged, you know, in so many years, or there's going to be a lot of racism there. And then I looked at the stats of how many African-American students were there, or how many black students were there versus the rest of the university. And so I would present kind of both sides of this argument and then start a discussion in class of, you know, how the students feel about it. So to answer Ms. Rector's question, what I try to do is I do identify as who I am, and I think that's okay to do. Particularly, it depends on the classes that you're teaching. So in finance, I don't think I can walk in and say, I'm a black woman, now I'm going to teach you finance. But I think it depends on the class. But I try to create an environment where students feel safe to talk about any kind of issues, where they feel safe to talk about their perspectives on things. And then I try my hardest not to engage in the conversation where I am saying that the way that I think of something, they should think that way too. Does that make sense?
It does. And I have loved this whole conversation, but we are out of time. I just want to give a shout out to Natalie Hicks. She says, you're the best professor ever, and I can see it. I can feel it right through this phone. So thank you so much for sharing your time with us today.
Thank you so much. And Natalie, thanks for the shout out. Monique, thank you for your time, and thank you for thinking about me. I really appreciate this.
Oh, you're very welcome. And as always, I'd like to thank my wonderful engineer, Jamla Harrison, from Refined Solutions for being my eyes and my ears. Join us next Wednesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. And follow us on Facebook's A Chat in the Garden with Monique A.J. Smith. Have a significant rest of the day.
Thank you, too.